That's why I don't read the newspaper, because it's garbage. And the editor that let it come out is garbage.
Or do you do what everybody else in the media does, just create some shit and throw it on the wall and see what sticks, which is what I see happening everywhere.
Where are we at in society today? I'm a man. I'm 40.
When my time on earth is gone and my activities here are past, I want they bury me upside down and my critics can kiss my
It is Sunday, October 13th for Patreon subscribers, and it is Monday, October 14th for the rest of yous. Welcome to Menace to Society, the college football show that gives you under the hood inside access analysis into college football without any bias, without any financial gain. If we say someone's good that's not good, we don't make a dollar. So here we are to give you my opinion, our opinion, into college football and give you some behind-the-scenes insider access as well. So big weekend in college football. A huge upset in a playoff contender in Georgia. A big win by LSU. Big win by Oklahoma. And some other games that are of note. So let's get started. We want to start out with a little bit of a ranking conversation, because it's about that time where we can actually start discussing it. Now, some of these teams have played some games. We're starting to see some teams for what they are. And the one thing, so the AP poll just came out, the AP voters. And let me tell you, I'm gonna give you actual analytic rankings here in a minute, because that's far, far more accurate than some media personnel that gets a vote. And I would love to, I think next episode, maybe we'll go through the list of people that are voting. The
voters.
Because the real problem is, one, do they have any idea what they're talking about? Like, is there any credibility behind who they are and what they actually know about the sport? And two, do they even watch, like, the landscape of college football? Like, you have these people that are, like, SEC insiders, and it's like, yeah, but have you watched Oklahoma or Ohio State outside of the one national game that was at night? Probably not. The one girl that set me off the last day was the Heather Dinich, I think is her Dinich. Yeah, I don't know her name, but I watched her on TV, and she just the comments that she's making and stuff. I sit there and I'm like, one, do you have any idea what you're talking about? The answer's no. Two, have you even watched these teams on film to even give yourself a chance at having a knowledgeable take, or are you just a cog from ESPN that is stuffing a narrative down people's throats to get done what they want done?
What did she say? Do you remember what she said?
Well, she was talking about teams and how, like, what they did well, and I don't remember anything. The one thing specific and why I completely, she lost all credibility immediately, was her initial playoff four had three SEC teams in it. And I was like, all right, you're done. Get out.
Change the channel.
But what she was doing, she was talking about Georgia and how their playoff hopes aren't over. And the stuff she actually said was like, I mean,
true.
No, it's all true. Of course it's true. I mean, what are you talking about? Boise State's playoffs hopes aren't over. Minnesota's playoffs hopes aren't over. They're undefeated.
They could go.
So it's like, okay, no one gives a shit. No shit, their playoffs hopes aren't over. Oh, woo. What a knowledgeable take. But I want to know why. Why do you think that they're still a playoff contender? Why? I haven't yet thought they were a playoff contender, and now they got upset. So they just removed themselves even further from the conversation in my mind. It's like, what are you basing it on? But this is the world we live in. The one cool thing, and people got so upset because I did it on purpose. I put out the top eight, not the top 10, because the nine and 10 were SEC 10, yeah. Teams. So I said, oh, look at this, top eight. And then I intentionally lumped Notre Dame in with the Big Ten and called it Midwest schools, and left Clemson out of the Southeast schools and called them an Atlantic Coast school. Yeah. Because if you do that, there's four Midwest teams. I think two SEC teams, one Atlantic Coast team, one Southwest region team.
Nice.
But anyways, you look at the top 10, and it's pretty indicative of what we said preseason and really what people have said all along. Three Big Ten teams in the top 10, plus Notre Dame would be your fourth. I know they're not in a conference, but they're certainly in the Big Ten country. So four from this region, four from the ACC, one from the ACC, so that would be five, and then one from the Big 12. And so half of the top eight, four of them are Midwest schools, three are Southeast or Atlantic Coast schools, and one is a Southwest school. Zero from the Northeast, zero from the West Coast. But here's what I did do, and I think this is the best way to go about it, because you have to ask yourself, who do you want to rely on? Like, when you say, all right, what are the rankings? Like, who do you want to rely on? Do you want to rely on a reporter that maybe doesn't know anything about football that gets a vote or maybe hasn't watched half of the country? What do you want to rely on? So I rely on analytics and my own knowledge, my own research. That's what I rely on. So what I did was I took the top four, in my opinion, analytics sites, and although some of them are ridiculous, but like the FPI, S&P, Cigarin, and Pro Football Focus. I took those four, took their top 10 rankings, and then it's real simple. Average the rankings, ranked the averages. So here is your top 10 teams in the country based on analytics, not based on Heather Dinich. Analytics, you know, like actual research into football. Mm-hmm. Ohio State 1, Bama 2, Wisconsin 3, LSU 4, Oklahoma 5, Georgia 6, Penn State 7, Clemson 8, Oregon 9, Auburn 10. Huh. LSU's a little low, but that's because of Cigarin. Cigarin has them 6th in the country. I don't even know if that's how you say it, nor do I care. But that is the top 10, analytic top 10. How about that?
Is that after the Georgia loss?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow. Right. Surprising, I guess, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, because they're 10th. Maybe, but again, Pro Football Focus is going on grades now. Mm-hmm. Just grades. Just analyzing how well a team blocks, doesn't block, throws, catches. So Georgia had a down week, but they're still graded really high on the season. So Pro Football Focus definitely increased Georgia's stature in that list. I mean, they're 10th in the Cigarin, 7th in S&P, 6th in FBI, and then 2nd in Pro Football Focus for grades.
Gotcha.
So again, this is just analytics. It's just, I'm just giving you something based on something, not just, I think that Georgia's the number 3 team in the country.
Even if they lose.
Even if they lose, they're still a playoff team.
Right.
But I just thought that was worth noting at the very least. But let's talk about it. Let's talk about Georgia. Let's talk about the South Carolina game. And I will say preseason, I don't want to say I called it or I told you so, but every week I've said the same thing. I think Jake Fromm is a really good quarterback. He is not an elite quarterback. They don't have the offensive skill to compete on a national level. And I certainly
no wide receivers, right?
I certainly would not have predicted a loss to South Carolina, but I knew they were vulnerable and I knew they were a pretender. Mm-hmm. Now, I was a little impressed with Notre Dame, but I guess that is yet to be seen what Notre Dame is. But I'll tell you this. The first thing of note other than that is, how about Ryan Helinski? I mean, wow. First of all, if you don't remember, a couple weeks ago they highlighted it, and I got a kind of a personal attachment to it. But Ryan is the brother of Tyler Helinski, the starting quarterback at Washington State that committed suicide. And they did a big expose on that, the mental health, concussions, and all that stuff. And when Alex Grinch was our DC at Ohio State, he was at Washington State with Tyler. And so he provided a lot of insight into how it was just a beautiful, great kid. And not to get back into that topic, but I immediately became a huge fan of Ryan Helinski, knowing nothing about him. And so I'll tell you this, he played out of his mind. And he wasn't exceptional, but I'll tell you this, he outplayed Jake Fromm. Plain and simple, not even close. And Jake Fromm, I think, is the biggest pretender at the quarterback position in college football right now. You look at that game, 3 interceptions. Granted, one was a horrible drop by his receiver in overtime, right through his hands, into the DB's hands. And he had a fumbled snap going into the red zone. As he pulled, the center was blocking right, he pulled out early and dropped the snap, which is inexcusable for an elite team from their elite quarterback. Inexcusable. 28 of 51, 55% completion. And I mean, if I'm not mistaken, his leading receiver was Israel Mukuwamu. That was his leading receiver. The problem being, Israel plays corner for South Carolina.
Yeah.
he actually threw him the ball 3 times. So Israel had 3 catches, 1 for a touchdown, but it was for the other team.
That's never good.
It's never good, but what a game that kid played. I mean, 3 picks. One of them was a pick 6, I think. It was unbelievable. But the only firepower they have on offense is DeAndre Swift, and he's really good. I mean, he, of course, went over 113 yards on 23 carries. But what South Carolina and Will Muschamp did a great job of is they contained him. He's one of those players, he's going to get his, but you have to kind of contain him, and they did. He came into the game averaging 7 yards a carry, and against South Carolina's defense, he averaged 4.9 yards a carry. That is a significant containment of a great player, and that's what they did really well. And then I sat and rewatched the game this morning. That game was so catastrophic at the end of the second half for Georgia. It should have been 10-10 at half. But then Jake Fromm, as they're driving to try to score points right before the end, he makes this ill-advised, horrible lobbed late pass to a hitch to the field. And, I mean, just misses completely. And sure enough, pick six to the house. Now South Carolina's up 17-10. Then Georgia still has a chance to run their two-minute offense, and they do it really well. They go right down the field with, I think, 40 seconds left, something like that. And then they get down to the red zone right before the half, go to kick a field goal. It gets blocked. And you're sitting there like, man, this is not going your way. So then you come off a halftime, very uneventful third quarter, no scores, just kind of back and forth, really average play. And then it's about to be the fourth quarter. Georgia's about to enter the red zone, and Fromm drops the snap and gives the ball back to South Carolina on the very first play of the fourth quarter. At that point, I was like, the football gods are against the dogs today.
Sometimes you're just destined to lose, I guess, right?
And you just keep moving on. Go through the second half. Another horrible throw by Fromm. I mean, horrible throw for his second pick of the day in the middle of fourth quarter. Then Georgia gets the ball back after a horrible decision by Will Muschamp. Think about this. There's like 40-some seconds left. South Carolina has fourth down, and it's a 57-yard field goal. 40-some seconds left. If you miss that field goal, you give Georgia the ball with 40 seconds left, an amazing field position to just get 15 yards and kick a field goal. Mm-hmm. And game over, you lose. So in that scenario, you punt the ball, Will. You punt it. You punt it down to the 10, make them have to drive 90 yards in 40 seconds, which they probably won't do, and then you go play overtime, which is what ended up happening anyways. But he gave them the win on a platter. And Kirby Smart, Jake Fromm, they could not get it done. So they get the ball back, and then Fromm has a they don't score. We go to overtime. Then they go to overtime. Georgia gets the ball. Fromm throws a little spot route right through the receiver's hand. Should have been a catch. Interception, and it looks like South Carolina is going to win the game. Then what South Carolina do? Shanks the kick to send it to double overtime. Unbelievable. Then
trying to give the game away.
And then in double overtime, I'll tell you this. This is, you talk about a Will Muschamp gamble. It's fourth and one in double overtime. Mind you, neither of you just scored, and now you just stall it out. It's fourth and one. He, instead of going for points, they go for it, and he gambles, and they get it, which is phenomenal. Then Georgia ends up getting a goal line stand, and South Carolina has to settle for a field goal anyways.
Yeah.
Then Georgia goes three and out, and here's your elite quarterback, right? You're the guy that's going to win you the national championship. This is your year. They hand the ball to DeAndre Swift, gain a zero. Fromm goes 0-for-2, incomplete, three and out, kicker misses wide left, game over.
Game.
That's how eventful this game was. Four overtime possessions, three total points. It's a bad, bad deal. But ultimately, this story is one that I've been professing for months. Georgia does not have the offensive skill to remain in the national conversation. And Jake Fromm is not in the upper echelon of college quarterbacks. South Carolina, here's how you know that. South Carolina had three of their four starting defensive backs grayed out in the top four players on defense. And Georgia did not execute in the throw games. Very simple. Jake Fromm was very below average. And we are now in a situation where an above average Florida team might be the best team in the SEC East. Think about that. Mm-hmm. A Florida team that would at best finish fourth in the Big Ten might be in Atlanta come the first weekend in December. So we could talk about the SEC. The SEC is a two-team race right now. It really is.
They're both in the West.
And, it was preseason. If you had any knowledge, mm-hmm. I mean, you said Georgia might not lose to South Carolina for sure.
Well, yeah.
But they do not look like a contender. We don't compare them to last year's team. Last year's team had far greater talent on the offensive skill. Mm-hmm. And on top of that, so it's a two-team race. And sadly, they're both in the West, which is good. That sets up perfectly for a two-team making the playoffs.
Yeah, exactly.
It really does. But similarly, I don't think this is Bama's race to lose at this point. Alabama and LSU's run game are so similar. They're performing at a similar tick. LSU and Alabama are both throwing the ball as well as anyone in the country. Second and third, respectively, in yards, QBR, both top four in completion percentage. This is plain and simply a Tua versus Burrow matchup to see who comes out of the SEC. End of discussion. Defensively, they're also very similar.
Yep.
I mean, they're all their stats are similar. The one thing I will say, I think Alabama is a little bit better tackling team right now. They average around 6 missed tackles a game. LSU averages around 8 missed tackles a game, which isn't ideal, but it's not horrible. I mean, single digits, but it's high single digits. You'd like it to be down where Alabama or Ohio State and some of those other better tackling teams are. But I think this is kind of a clear-cut two-team race in the South.
Well, yeah, definitely. Whoever wins the Alabama-LSU game and goes to the SEC championship, I think they're just in the playoff automatic. Well, that is the playoff.
I mean, it's really that's the game for the SEC championship, that's for sure. And then the real question is going to be, can either Florida or Georgia, I guess, raise their level of play to compete with those two teams? And the other question is, how bad is that game? How well do they play against everyone else? And is it a situation where they're really sincerely discussing, like, Alabama making it after losing to LSU or vice versa?
Yeah, and the other thing, when you talk about Jake Fromm, and I wonder, you know, I think Georgia fans have to be asking this question, and that is Kirby Smart's loyalty to Jake Fromm hindering them because they let Justin Fields go?
Well, I mean, at the end of the day, you have to make a decision as a coach, and I've seen it both ways. I've seen it at Ohio State where I'm not saying it was the wrong decision, but to say that Dwayne Haskins wasn't a better quarterback than JT Barrett would be kind of naive not to say, but there's a lot more that goes into it. But certainly right now, as you watch games this fall alone with that sample size, you would say, yes, they made a mistake. However, this was also a year ago. Jake Fromm might have been a much better player a year ago, and Justin Fields has just developed that much. Maybe Ryan Day has that great an impact. You know, who knows?
Yeah, I've seen some message board stuff from Georgia fans where they're sitting there like, man, Ryan Day would be putting up 30-plus points a game with Georgia players. What's going on? And then the other thing is, Fromm doesn't have the skill that Fields has around him.
Not even close. I mean, it's not even. They don't have the defense that Ohio State has. They don't have the offensive skill. The only thing they have is they have a better running back, and that goes without saying. They do.
Do you think the teams, when Alabama plays LSU, do you think that the loser of that is pretty okay with losing? Because then they don't have to go and play in the SEC championship.
I mean, I don't think anyone's okay with losing. But no, absolutely. If there's four undefeated teams and they get left out, I don't think they'll be okay at all.
Yeah.
But all right, the other game I want to get to, we're going to take a break for a second, but I want to really talk about this Texas Oklahoma game too, because that was a huge game and a great performance by Oklahoma and a big win. But we'll get back right after this. Do you ever find yourself wishing that you could make some extra cash with your NFL knowledge? At MyBookie, they want to make your dream come true this season. Right now, all players are invited to play in the free $50,000 Survivor contest. Winner takes all. Contest starts October 8th and closes October 14th before the start of Monday Night Football. Pick one team each week, survive the longest, and you can take home $50,000 in cash. Make a successful deposit with MyBookie and you'll receive a free entry into the contest today. Between football season, the Major League Baseball playoffs, and the start of NBA and NHL seasons, it's time to get off the sideline and get into action. If you're the kind of guy who likes to bet a little to win a lot, try a parlay. For instance, if you like a couple of the big favorites this week, parlays are perfect because they let you bet multiple games together for a much bigger payout. So if you're going to bet this season, do the smart thing and go to mybookie.ag because no one gives you more ways to win. If you really want to support your team this season, don't just sit on the sidelines. Get in the game with MyBookie. And if you join right now, MyBookie will double your first deposit. Use promo code MENACE, M-E-N-A-C-E, to activate the offer. That's promo code MENACE to double your cash. Visit mybookie.ag today. You play, you win, and you get paid. Well, I will tell you this. If you bet on Texas to cover, that would have been a good bet this week in the old Red River Showdown?
Shootout?
Not allowed to say shootout.
I'm saying shootout. It's the Red River Shootout.
It's been the shootout since day one.
Jacksonville is the world's largest outdoor cocktail party.
Yeah, you're darn right it is.
But the Red River Showdown, what a night for college football and for the Big 12, and how indicative of the landscape that is college football today. And both teams, really, it was great insight into kind of who they are, their identity. And I'll tell you this, the first half was shocking. Shocking because it was a game of defense, believe it or not.
Right.
The first half was like, you thought you were watching like the old Alabama LSU of like mid-2000s, where it was just like a defensive slugfest.
Yeah, what was it like?
And I'm sitting here like, is this the Big 12?
Was it 10-3 at half? Right?
I mean, it was unbelievable.
Yeah, it was 10-3.
But it turned out in the end, both defenses kind of were what we thought they were. But for 30 minutes of football, it looked like a defensive battle. In the end, it was a landslide win. I mean, almost 200 more yards by Oklahoma, and really a preview of the rematch that is almost inevitable come early December, outside of one outlier that I'm calling right now. And I'll say, I was going to hold it till the end. I think Baylor upsets Texas.
Baylor?
Wow. Baylor upsets Texas in a couple weeks. Matt Rhule and the Baylor Bears are going to upset old Tommy Herman. Because Matt Rhule's a good friend of mine, and he's got my back. No, but this game was... Here's what happened. Texas played really well on defense in the first half, and really in the entire game they played well in situational defense, like third down, red zone, those situations. They played great the whole first half, the whole game in situations. And Oklahoma did not on offense. I mean, they held Jalen Hurts and Oklahoma to 3 of 12 on third down, 25%. Mm-hmm. That's horrific. Mm-hmm. Especially for an explosive offense like this, and especially for an offense where the quarterback can scramble, run, you know, do these things. You have to be closer to 50%. You have to. And the other thing they did was they held him to 2 touchdowns out of 5 trips into the red zone, which is, that's, I mean, 40% is not going to cut it. What they really did, they had 3 huge red zone stops in a row. And really it's what kept them in the game. They had a huge goal line stand with about 2 minutes left in the half. They had 2 turnovers they forced and obviously forced that field goal. What really killed Texas on defense when I watched it again this morning was when they played man coverage and all their different blitzes and different base coverages with playing man, and Jalen Hurts had the ability to escape the pocket, he looked downfield and saw nothing but the back of mm-hmm. Texas Longhorn jerseys in front of him. He had 17 carries for 131 yards and a touchdown. That's what killed him. And we also, you know what else we watched? We watched one of the top 5 wide receivers in the country dominate a very below average Texas secondary, but 10 catches on 12 targets, 0 drops, 171 yards, and 3 touchdowns. He took the game over, and there was not a player on Texas's team that had an answer for him.
Yeah.
It was unbelievable.
I saw the one replay, and they took a still shot of CeeDee Lamb after he caught the ball, and they go, this is when that D coordinator, defensive back coach, gets up in the room and gets the laser pointer out, because there are literally 5 Texas jerseys right there corralling him, and somehow he breaks a tackle, makes one miss, and gets out for a touchdown.
Yeah. He was electric. He was electric all night. He really took over the game. Him and Jalen Hurts running, scrambling and running around are really why Oklahoma won. I mean, look at it. 171 yards of receiving. Jalen Hurts has 131 yards rushing. That's 302 yards just between the two of them running around. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's ridiculous. And four of their touchdowns. But I'll tell you the other thing I saw, and I knew it was going to be like this the minute early. I mean, first drive, Oklahoma and Lincoln Riley let the world know the level of aggressiveness on offense they had early in the game, because he makes a bold call. It's 4th down on the goal line, 5 minutes into the game, with 10 minutes left in the first quarter, 5 minutes into the game, he goes for it and runs a rub route to CeeDee Lamb, and it perfectly executed, horribly covered, and he just kicks it to CeeDee Lamb for a touchdown. But that normally, I mean, on paper, that's where you just take points. I mean, 5 minutes into the game, you take points, get out of there, and just, you know, we'll come back and try again. That's what most people do. Yeah. And he let him know, this is the real deal on this side of the ball, and we're going for it, because that's how confident he was in the advantage they had on offense. The other thing that really I kind of touched on it, but what kept Texas in the game in the first half was the turnovers. I mean, they caused a fumble on Jalen Hurts. He's kind of stumbling. They hit the ball perfectly with the helmet. Really well. Great job. And then they pressured him and had an interception on when he scrambled around in the red zone. So they got after Jalen Hurts, and they really attacked the football and created turnovers, as opposed to what you see oftentimes in football, which are giveaways, where a guy just, you know, fumbles the ball or throws an inadvertent pick, like we just talked about Jake Fromm did. They created turnovers. They didn't just receive giveaways. But that's what kept them in the game in the first half. And then, obviously, second half, Oklahoma cleaned some things up and started to pull away. The other person is Sam Ellinger. He was exactly who I thought he was and who I said he was preseason. When I watch him on film, he's a poor man's Jake Fromm. Really good player, not elite. You have to go into these games if you're going to be a big-time quarterback, if you're going to be a Tua, Justin Fields, Joe Burrow. What those guys do in these big games is they make big plays down the field. Sam Ellinger, 0-4, 20-plus yards down the field, 0-4. You can't have that. Now, he played well. He did not make mistakes. He did not lose the game, but he also didn't go win it. He reminds me of Alabama quarterbacks back in the day, like pre-Jalen Hurts and Tua, where it was just a solid QB that, if surrounded by ridiculous talent, can be a championship-level player. The problem, and a player that won't make it happen himself.
So like a John David Booty?
Absolutely. But the reality is, that's not what Texas has.
No.
And the stat line that I saw that was alarming to me, he had 2 rushing touchdowns. But he had 23 carries for -9 yards rushing.
Well, it's 9 sacks. That's going to happen.
Yeah.
But I'm with you. He played decent. I'll say this. He didn't play poor. I'm not going to sit here and say he didn't play well. He just didn't play at an elite level. And the other group that I was severely disappointed in was the Texas wide receiver corps. They really screwed this game up. They had some huge drops in critical situations. And the one that I can't get out of my mind is they're on their own 1 yard line. And Tom Herman calls, he takes a shot down the field, which we used to do at Ohio State all the time. It's an instant game changer. You flip the field on one play. They take a shot, and Brennan Eagles beats his man, is wide open, and Sam Ellinger throws the ball perfectly. It's a dime. You can't throw it better. You can't execute it better. You can't do it better until Brennan Eagles decided he was Odell Beckham Jr. And throws one hand up like he's going to one hand it like some hot dog shithead and completely drops it. It's a very simple catch with two hands, and now you're looking at it like, wow. I mean, I can't get it out of my head because it was a receiver play, and that's where I kind of gravitate to. But that was the play that I can't stop pointing to, like, hey, bro, use two hands, catch the ball. You completely change the game. Completely. You flip the whole field. Even if we stall out, you just flip the field. Mm-hmm. And they didn't. And that's a huge, huge problem. That's a huge problem. I mean, that's something that has to get corrected, and you can't do that in these big games. You can get away with that shit against Texas Tech. You go play Oklahoma, you can't get away with that little shit. That's where you get exposed, and it's happened twice to Texas now against LSU and Oklahoma, and it's going to happen against Baylor, I think. I mean, if they don't get it fixed. Now, on the other side of the line here, the Jalen Hurts euphoria seems to be coming back down to earth. And who he was at Alabama seems to be still who he is. An absolutely stunningly dynamic player. A great runner. An electric quarterback that simply can't throw the ball well enough to be a dominant quarterback nationally. When they go play someone and have to throw it, they will lose. A la Alabama 2 years ago when Tua stepped in, right? Mm-hmm. To win the game and win the national championship because they needed a guy that could throw it to beat Georgia. That's what happened, right? Yeah. And maybe it's just a bad game. Maybe it's just a bad game. I get it. But you can't go 4 of 11 under pressure with an interception. Grade out at 54%, the 16th worst graded out player on offense for Oklahoma. You can't do it. The reality is that Jalen Hurts is a dynamic player, and an average thrower. While Sam Ellinger is a better pure quarterback, without a CD Lamb. Now, who's the better player? That's not even close. Jalen Hurts.
Yeah. Jalen Hurts.
Who's the better pure quarterback? Sam Ellinger. He just doesn't have CD Lamb. Mm-hmm. He's got a bunch of above average receivers. No, I won't even call them average. They're above average receivers. That's what they are. But I'll tell you, the one thing that Alex Grinch did extremely well is he got after Sam Ellinger's ass, causing 9 sacks, further exposing the Texas offensive line had a rough day. Haven't mentioned it yet. You give up 9 sacks and average 2.8 yards a rush. Yikes.
Yeah.
So kudos to Alex Grinch and Oklahoma's defense for that stat, because they really played well. They let up some points, but they played really well. But that is not a good offense in Austin that we watched yesterday. And I'm telling you, watch out for Baylor.
You love that Baylor pick.
I'm just saying. I mean, I watch out for Baylor.
I will.
Baylor's undefeated, playing really well. I mean, they certainly don't have the firepower to beat Texas yet. But I'm that's the one. I'm not going to call
where
it yet.
Where is that game?
Just watch out for it.
Where is that? Is that
no idea?
No idea. It's going to happen though.
Somewhere in Texas.
Yeah. It's in the state of Texas for sure. But we need to jump in LSU Florida here in a second. But just want to 1 second take a break from one of our sponsors. Support for Medicine Society comes from Manscaped, who is number one in men's below-the-belt grooming. Manscaped offers precision-engineered tools for your family jewels. Halloween is right around the corner, and you don't want to spook someone with your scary bush. You might be Chewbacca, Bigfoot, or a hairy bear, but it's what's under the costume that really matters.
Oh, man, I have a funny story about that. I was a couple years ago, well, actually probably about 6-7 years ago, I wish I would have had these products they sent us, because I wore one of those morph suits for Halloween, and I was a little too ungroomed, I think, and it was kind of noticeable.
Oh, you could see it.
Yeah, it was. I had to put some shorts on.
Yeah, that's not good. That's not good. But don't be that hairy guy. Manscaped is forever changing the grooming game with their Perfect Package 2.0. Inside the Perfect Package, you'll find their electric trimmer called the Lawnmower 2.0. This waterproof and skin-safe technology will protect you from nicking your pumpkins. You can also create less mess by trimming in the shower. And of course, let's not forget about the Crop Preserver, an anti-chafing ball deodorant and moisturizer. You already put deodorant on your armpits. Why are you not putting deodorant on the smelliest part of your body? The Perfect Package 2.0 also includes anti-chafing performance boxer briefs that keep your package cool and smelling fresh all day. For on-the-go freshness, you'll love the Crop Reviver Ball Toner Spray. It's time to get clean and mean with this Perfect Package 2.0. Fortunately, right now, you're getting 20% off with free shipping using our code MENACE, M-E-N-A-C-E, at manscaped.com. Stay sexy this Halloween. Your balls will thank you. Again, get 20% off of free shipping with the code MENACE at manscaped.com. That's 20% off with free shipping at manscaped.com. Use code MENACE. Well, speaking of pumpkins, an absolute pumpkin of college football. I think he's the second greatest gift to college football fans. Outside of Mike Leach, there's no, I mean, that's the clear-cut number one.
Number one.
Number two has to be Eddie O.
Eddie O.
I mean, with every LSU game, it's like, I don't care who they're playing, I have to watch it. And after every LSU game, I have to watch the post-game conference.
Oh, man, the on-field interviews are unbelievable.
But it's just like, I mean, you get him going about LSU football, or what he said pregame, he said, well, nothing like it. The Death Valley where the opponent dreams come to die. And you're like, what did you?
He definitely sounds like that guy on Waterboy. Remember
that time, Bobby Boucher's on a hot time when the Bourbon Bowl?
It's so funny to listen to him. It's great.
It's one of my favorite things about college football right now. And I'm so glad after, because I loved him at Ole Miss. If you ever get a chance to look up his car dealer commercial at Ole Miss, it is phenomenal. And when he obviously got fired there, was an assistant at USC, and you know, made his rounds. When he got back to LSU and was named the head coach, I like almost wanted to throw a party. I was like, yes, post game press conference, we get it all back. Thank God, college football, gave us a gift.
I don't know if there's anywhere better he could be either.
Yeah, that's definitely the best spot.
But that's the thing. He was there for a while. I mean, he was destined for that job.
Yeah.
And then he took an Ole Miss job, and he didn't cheat like Hugh Freeze, and so he didn't. He actually did a respectable job. Mm-hmm. But whatever. He's where he needs to be, and he has LSU playing at another level. And on that note, the preseason Heisman frontrunner, and he's making it so easy on everyone, is Joe Burrow.
Jose.
He is playing at a different level. Really, when I watch quarterback play, it's him, Tua, and Justin Fields. That's it. There's no one else playing on that level right now. Yep. And I think Joe is even a slight notch above those two, because he is completing almost 80% of his balls, has over 2,100 yards passing, 25 touchdowns to 3 interceptions. It's ridiculous.
Yeah.
And he's graded out on Pro Football Focus by and far the number one quarterback in the country. It's ridiculous.
That ratio is ridiculous.
Ridiculous.
25-3. My goodness.
25-3. So here's the stat line that no one has. I haven't heard anyone talk about it, and I've listened to quite a bit and researched quite a bit, and no one is talking about it. The most ridiculous stat of the game, and why I think LSU is one of the most dominant teams in the country and has an edge on Alabama right now. They just went into, I mean, they just beat the number 7 team in the country by 14. Now, Florida was far inflated for me. Mm-hmm. So I think they were still a good football team. Yeah. They beat them by 14 points. Get this stat line. They had 4 third downs.
Wow.
That's how well they did on first and second down, that only 4 times in a drive they had a third down opportunity.
That offense is a machine.
I coached for 15 years and have been a fan of college football I've never seen anything like that.
Right.
4 third down opportunities. It's ridiculous.
That's unbelievable. And you know, say what you want about Florida, the one thing that I do know about Florida is their defense is legitimate.
Oh, their defense is legit. Yeah. It's legit. And LSU goes out, and I've been critical of their run game, because Joe Burrow's throwing the ball so well. They haven't run the ball real well. And Florida has a stout front 7. They have really a stout defense overall. They rush the ball for 9.1 yards a carry. I mean, what do you want? First down, hand it to them, 9 yards. Okay, what is it? Second 1. What do you want to do? I don't know, 7 trick plays? Like, what do you mean?
That's how you end up with 4 third downs in the entire game.
It absolutely is. And then you put up 511 total yards. It was one of the finest performances I've seen by a team. I mean, Joe Burrow went 21 of 24. He had 3 incomplete passes for almost 300 yards and 3 touchdowns. Ridiculous.
Yeah, that running back, he averaged over 10 yards a carry.
Unbelievable.
Edwards-Hilaire.
Yeah.
Yeah, Clyde Edwards-Hilaire.
10.3 yards a carry, 2 touchdowns, 134. It was an absolute landslide. Ridiculous. And Florida, was also kind of what I've been critical they are. Now, I'll tell you the other guy that showed up a little bit. He had a lot of catches, didn't do much. He had two touchdowns, but didn't do much as far as explosions or anything like that. It was Van Jefferson. I've been waiting for him to show up. I loved him out of high school. I loved him at Ole Miss. I loved him when he was transferring. I mean, I think he's as talented as anyone. He just hasn't been producing for whatever reason. Freddie Swain didn't do much, who was kind of the impact player. Mm-hmm. Trayvon Grimes had a touchdown, but I mean, he was really a zone receiver. He was just running kind of sloppy routes and getting in a void of a zone, and they were throwing it to him. So it was their skill on offense at Florida is scary, and people wanted to be critical when I said they don't have a legit quarterback, right? They don't. I mean, they're on Kyle Trask, who's an average quarterback in my opinion. And it's no further evident than the fact that now they're rolling two quarterbacks, which I love Emory Jones. I love that he's playing. But you can't roll two quarterbacks and tell me you have one. You can't.
Yeah, I mean, Kyle Trask looked good. I mean, he was average or above average this game.
Yeah.
But Emory Jones obviously is kind of a trick quarterback. He just comes in and runs the ball. He only attempted three passes the whole game.
Yeah, it was what it was. And, I mean, Kyle Trask didn't do anything poor. He just didn't do anything really well. And that's evidence in the score, I guess. I mean, it was just a great performance by LSU. I'd be hard-pressed to tell me there's a better team in the country. Maybe Ohio State. And then, I mean, Alabama's similar. But four true freshman starters on defense, man, that LSU offense is going to roll into that matchup. And that's going to be the game of the year. I mean, obviously, everyone thinks that right now. That's not it's nothing
breaking news.
It's not a hot take.
No, it's not some crazy hot take that I just gave you
but
there.
But Baylor, don't forget about Baylor.
That's a hot take.
That is a hot take.
And when they win, people are going to be like, just like people. I mean, people on Twitter the last 3 days have been like, bro, Coach Zach, at Coach Zach Smith, I've never paid attention to tackling so much, but yeah, it's so right. True. And or it was like,
I've noticed,
man, you've been saying all year Georgia doesn't have any receivers and they really can't get open today. And it's like, yeah, no, hello. So when Baylor wins, people are going to be like, holy shit. But it was a big weekend for that was the national landscape of college football. And I want to make sure you check out our Menace to the Midwest show that'll be up tomorrow when we talk about some of the other relevant games to the Midwest, like Notre Dame had a big win against USC, yep, against a down USC, but still a win against USC nonetheless, right?
It's
and
a
then
rivalry.
Yeah, and then Penn State had a good win against Iowa. It wasn't a blowout win, but they went to Iowa.
At night
and squeaked out a win.
They won by like five, I think.
Yeah, 17-12. It was a good win for them. Yeah. It kept, you know, didn't hurt them, didn't help them. It certainly didn't shake the world up and say, oh my God, this Penn State team. But no. I think there's three teams in the Big Ten right now for sure, and I think the real two are Wisconsin, Ohio State, and then Penn State's the third that could shake it up, and it could also screw up the other two, really.
Yeah, we got to talk about on the Midwest show that almost catastrophe for Michigan, letting Illinois back in the game.
Oh yeah, unbelievable. Oh yeah, that's right. It was like what 20-25.
When you said almost catastrophe at Michigan, I thought you meant hiring Harbaugh.
No, that was a catastrophe. That's not an almost.
Gotcha. Well, yeah, that. But make sure you check out that show. That'll be up tomorrow. And we appreciate you tuning in. As we like to always mention, if you're interested in joining this movement, this platform, it's going to be growing over the next month or two as we get some of this contracted expansions going. So if you're interested in written content or really, if you want to be a part in any way, reach out and start a conversation. My email is zach@menacetosocietypodcast.com. Reach out to me. I'll send you all the information about the sign up form. So we have all of your info. And then if you're interested in sponsorship and advertising, that is growing exponentially right now, and we're really excited about it to continue to deliver you content that and advertisers and partnerships that we are a part of and believe in. So thank you for tuning in. Thank you for joining us. As we always say, we appreciate it. Hope you were entertained, if nothing else, or maybe even educated, maybe not at all. Maybe we're idiots. I don't care. But if you didn't like it, as we say, go fuck yourself, San Diego.
That's why I don't read the newspaper, because it's garbage. And the editor that let it come out is garbage.
Or do you do what everybody else in media does, just create some shit and throw it on the wall and see what sticks, which is what I see happening everywhere.
Where are we at in society today? I'm a man. I'm 40.
When my time on Earth is gone and my activities here are past, I want they bury me upside down and my critics can kiss my
ass. Is that how it was?